I don't wanna be the boy that runs in the back. I don't wanna be the kid that falls in the dark. All I really want to be is the guy that gets that girl.
Welcome to the AJ Steele Show. We discuss politics, sex, money, and everything in between. And now, here's your host, an immigrant, a self-made millionaire, an American, AJ Steele. Everything I say and do, I'm
just not good. Dear listeners, I have a few important questions for you to ponder while you listen to my monologue. Most of the so-called conservatives completely bought into the gay lifestyle, and they accepted gay adoptions and gay marriages as normal. Why is it that they're suddenly so upset at the trans movement and the push to mainstream pedophilia? Did they honestly think that accepting gay marriage was ever going to be enough for the LGBTQ movement? And while you're pondering this, let me ask you another question. Why is it that none of us are allowed to criticize the gay lifestyle and agenda without being branded homophobic and completely discredited and ostracized for it? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of the AJ Steele Show. I have so much to tell you and very little time to do so because I wanted to play you an interesting interview we recorded yesterday with a man whom I have a lot of respect for. His name is Rabbi Michael Barclay. And you may remember him from his appearances on our show and the Michael Savage show and in various other major media outlets in our country. Rabbi Barclay, as you may recall, was the only rabbi in California who kept his house of worship open despite the orders from Governor Newsom to shut down all churches and all synagogues during the COVID hysteria. Well, the devil never sleeps, and neither do those who battle him. And in a few minutes, you're going to hear about a horrible family vacation that the good rabbi, his wife, and kids took aboard a cruise ship, during which they were subjected to non-stop LGBTQ pedophile messaging by a drag queen cruise director and his hyper-sexualized crew, which was more interested in grooming young children than providing a clean, fun time for the entire family. So much for family cruises. Now, while I was talking to the rabbi, I started having some interesting thoughts and questions which should be addressed by major media figures on the conservative side, but for some reason, they never are. So not being a shill nor a slave to the media government complex, I guess I'll just go for the jugular myself and tell you exactly how I feel about the LGBTQ movement. Now, what I'm going to be telling you also happens to be the truth that most medical professionals and members of the police department and our penal departments agree with. But they would never dare say so, because they will most likely lose their livelihood, their reputations, and maybe even their freedom, if they ever did speak out. So I will speak out for all of them. The first point I'm going to make is the reason why the AJ Steele Show got banned from Twitter. It is my observation that the mental illness that leads most folks to become LGBTQ extends far beyond just their sexual deviancy. In other words, most gay people that I've met and dealt with on a professional basis are not only troubled by their unnatural sexual tendencies, but they're also troubled with depression, self-loathing, and a general hatred of the non-gay world. Not to mention that I believe that they suffer from something I call arrogant victimhood. Look, I worked in healthcare for many years, and I can tell you one thing with absolute certainty. When dealing with schizophrenics or folks suffering from bipolar delusions, you never agree with or encourage their delusions. You treat them with medication and therapy, which is always centered on reorienting them to reality. If a schizophrenic claims that he or she is Napoleon, for example, you don't agree with him or her and normalize their delusions. You recenter the person, you reorient them to a reality, and you try to work on the underlying causes of that delusion, which is usually a manifestation of mental illness, drug use, or both. By the same token, a man born with male genitalia and male DNA should not be encouraged or celebrated for having delusions of being a female. Number two, many homosexuals are not pedophiles. But most pedophiles are homosexuals, and I'm talking percentage-wise. And most of them happen to be male. And most of those males were sexually molested by other pedophiles in their youth. If you don't believe me, look at the stats. And none of what I'm saying absolves the straight pedophiles. They're just as sick, they're just as toxic and just as dangerous, and they should be locked up for good with the rest of them, instead of being out in the open and grooming our kids in front of our very eyes. Now, number three, and this is more of a question than a statement. Much like most libertarians and conservatives that I've known, I've always taken the position of live and let live when it comes to the gay community. I don't care what people do in their own bedrooms as long as they're not advertising it or forcing my family to watch it or asking us to accept it as normal behavior. But in my mind, I'm starting to challenge this orthodoxy and maybe even question my set of beliefs. I'm really starting to wonder if we've been dealing with this issue correctly. The fact we've allowed it to fester and grow. And this is gnawing at me. Could it be that us being so free-thinking and open-minded and respectful is the very reason that the grooming of children and general pedophilia is now becoming more and more acceptable and normalized in our lives? It's almost like we've unleashed a monster. I think it was the Chinese who came up with the concept of death by a thousand cuts. Instead of killing the person outright, you slash them a little bit over and over, incrementally, until that person dies. Are we suffering from the same type of death as a society? Think about it. We've allowed LGBTQ people to come out in the open. We gave them the right to adopt kids. Then we allowed them to marry. We gave them preferential minority treatment when it came to government jobs and entertainment roles. And finally, we allowed deviant cross-dressers to read books to our kids in our public libraries and to hang out with them, to meet with them in our schools and kindergartens. What we've done is sell out our kids in our obsession to appear to be nice and to be politically correct. Because of our vanity and some kind of a bullshit sense of fair play, we put the gay movement and everything that it entails ahead of the safety of our own children. So why are we so surprised that accepting and mainstreaming mentally ill people would lead to a complete moral and physical and spiritual collapse of normal society? Not long ago, homosexuality was defined as a mental illness by psychiatry. It was right there in the DSM, which is the book that codes mental illness. Then as the political winds changed, that diagnosis was removed. Now there's a lot of folks in the medical field who claim that transgenderism is not a mental illness. Could pedophilia be far behind? Think about it. In the last 20 years, a normal family unit and men and women of tradition and religion have become the enemy. We are now the ones being hunted and humiliated and silenced, while every freak and mentally ill member of the gay community or the woke progressive world has been elevated to sainthood. Our side is being mocked and ostracized, while the other side is celebrated. Have you watched television lately? The inmates are running the asylum. But why did this happen? It happened because we've become apathetic slaves to our corporations, their corrupt mainstream media lapdogs, and the public educational systems. In many ways, our love of free speech and respect for the rights of the other viewpoints has become our own undoing. We've become a nation where the rights of fringe minorities have superseded the rights of the majority, and it was never supposed to be that way. And the most shocking thing of all is the fact that most of us are guilty of extreme cowardice and abject failure from a moral and spiritual standpoint when it comes to protecting the most important and vulnerable things in this world, our kids. I'm not even talking about the progressives and the woke, because they've already given up their humanity and self-preservation, and it would be a waste of my time to discuss them. But I want to talk about conservatives. Every time I write or speak about the LGBTQ movement, I get pushback like you would never believe from them. Yes, from conservatives. Talking about gays has become so taboo, even with them. There's very little pushback against deviancy because the whole gay lifestyle has been mainstreamed to the point that nobody dares to challenge it anymore. Nobody but me. And maybe a few men and women of religion, or maybe a few parents who are brave enough and care enough for their kids. And what happens when we do? Well, I know what happened to me. Elon Musk's Twitter just banned our account for good because I made some perfectly reasonable points about LGBTQ behavior. They told me that my statements were calling for violence, and they weren't. 6 months ago, YouTube removed one of our most popular videos featuring a Harvard psychiatrist, Dr. Sheldon Roth. Why, you ask? Because he dared to tell the truth about the trans movement and about mental illness. And just this morning, I got a notice from YouTube telling me that they removed another interview I did over a year ago with a brave black woman named Kyla Dunn, who fought her school board against CRT and LGBTQ indoctrination. Look, I can go on and on, and I can bend like the rest of the so-called conservative hosts who sold their souls to the gods of money and social acceptance. But I won't. I will continue telling the truth as long as we're allowed to keep this platform, and as long as all of you listeners continue to tune in. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to take our first break. But before I do that, I would like to personally thank the hundreds of people who emailed me after our Twitter account was shut down. The fact that you take the time from your busy day to look up our contact information and send me a personal note of encouragement truly touched my heart, and I will do my best to get back to all of you in a timely manner. The only thing that keeps me going is knowing that I have so many loyal listeners all over the world, and all I ask in return is that more of you continue spreading the word about the AJ Steele Show and remind your family and friends to subscribe and listen. Please stick around to hear my interview with Rabbi Michael Barclay, because listening to a man of God who actually stands up for what he believes in can sometimes rejuvenate the soul and give us the strength to fight another day. My dear friends, I would like to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah, and to thank you for all of your support and listenership throughout the years. This is the AJ Steele Show, and we will be right back.
The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wives, because he tells it just like it is. You finally see your love belongs
to me. Rabbi Michael Barclay, welcome to the AJ Steele Show.
Thanks, AJ.
Well, it seems like you never shy away from controversy. Last time we talked, which was over a year ago, you were fighting against COVID lockdowns and the totalitarian, draconian measures our government was taking to enforce them, which included shutting down houses of worship. Now, you were at the forefront of fighting back, and you won. You and the good people who dared to stand up for their religious rights were vindicated. But one victory isn't enough, because how do they say it? Oh God, thy swamp is so deep and my ship is so small. I'm paraphrasing this, right? But it's the truth. It's almost like we're playing whack-a-mole. Every time the good guys get a little victory, the bad guys just keep popping back up. So let's start at the very beginning and the essence of your latest travail and your article for pjmedia.com. So as a rabbi and a good Jew, one of your most important priorities is to get married and to have children, which you did. Now, as a rabbi, a good Jew, and maybe even more important, a good father, you decided to take the wife and the kids on a family cruise. Tell us a little bit about it.
So, look, our family loves cruising. We've taken over a dozen cruises since the kids were very little, since they were, you know, less than a year, because it's a great vacation. No one can reach me. So it's actually a great way of relaxing with my family. And we've gone on Princess and Norwegian and Carnival and Royal Caribbean. And it's always been wonderful. And there's always been the family programming, which goes on all day and into the evening. And then I know there's adult programming, whether it's the casino or the nightclubs that are 18 plus, that take place, you know, 9, 10 o'clock and later. And the two don't really intersect. And so after a long pandemic and a lot of fights, as you said, and a lot of battles, and having my house vandalized multiple times for keeping our temple open and all sorts of things like that, most recently, and it still goes on, a month and a half ago, an M80 was thrown at our house. So we went on vacation on Carnival, which is the family fun ship. And we went on this Carnival Panorama, amazing facility, $700 million ship, a few years old, fabulous water slides and all sorts of kids programming and suspended bicycles around it. And it is a kid's paradise. Wow. Unfortunately, what we found out is that it is kind of like Hansel and Gretel. right? You go to the witch's hut and everything, all the candy's there. It's a perfect place for kids. And then when you get inside, it's dangerous.
So, Rabbi, let me ask you a question before we get into it. I've never been on a cruise, and the only kind of cruises I've ever seen are the old reruns of The Love Boat. And I used to be in love with Julie, the cruise director. That was my first love ever. But to me, cruises are about people looking for love.
No, no, that was the case, I think, many years ago in The Love Boat, when there were small cruises. These big mega ships, it's the exact opposite. There's obviously the percentage of people that are, you know, what happens on the ship stays on the ship type of thing. They're looking to hook up. There's nightclubs and all that, but it's mostly families. And the physical facility is built for families, especially on Carnival, these fun ships. And so we got on the ship. And I want to preface this. AJ, you know me. I am in no way homophobic or transphobic or anything else. I really don't care what people do in the privacy of their own home. I don't even care what they do in public in the right circumstances. But I do not want to have my children or any children have to see a person on a strip pole if it is a hot woman or if it is a drag queen. I just don't think it's appropriate for children and to be forced in children. And what we experienced in Carnival is a wokeness that makes Disney look like amateurs.
Wow.
And I don't say that in exaggeration. If you go to see a Disney movie, you're there for 2 hours. And after the 2 hours, the parents can talk to the parents or to the children and say, look, you know, this is talk about the different physical or the sexual agendas. On a cruise ship, you're there 24/7 for a week. You are stuck on a hole in the water and there is no getting out. So this amazing physical facility. And we get there and we're checking in on a Saturday. I'm a little uncomfortable because the cruise director is way, way onto the flamboyant side of sexuality. It's a little uncomfortable. Often you have gay cruise directors. I don't care about that. The picture of the guy on Carnival is a very conservative guy in a tuxedo, but he's a little, you know, way out there. But that's not what makes me so uncomfortable. He's constantly saying this language. We're all family. Carnival family. We're all family here. Get close. We're all a family. Spread love. And he's wearing shirts that say spread love. Now, the reason I'm uncomfortable with this from the start on Saturday is because that's the language of pedophilia. And that needs to be made clear. You're my friend, AJ. You're not my family. And these people aren't even my friends. The implication, and this is used by pedophiles, and that's why it's so creepy, is that, oh, look, little Davey, I'm family, just like your dad or your uncle. So it's not a problem when I put my hand on your back or I rub your head, because we're family and we're supposed to get close and spread love. So it's really creepy to me, okay, from day one, and to my children. So the Saturday night, they have their first family show. This is 7 o'clock for all the families, kids and stuff like that, little kids. My kids are not little, but they're 13, thank God. But they're still, I don't need to put them into situations as they're starting to learn about their own sexual, who they are sexually and what they want. I don't want to have them influenced by others. And already by Saturday, constantly on every announcement, every thing over the PA system, family, we're going to be, make sure you come to dinner. Family, this, family, that. And remember, spread love. Pedophilia language and grooming language. We get to the Saturday night show, family show. And this cruise director who really is, again, flamboyant is being kind and a nice way of phrasing it, a gentle way of phrasing it.
Why don't you not be so kind? What did he look like?
A drag queen.
There you go. There you go.
In fact, at one point in the cruise, which we missed, but it's on video and on YouTube, he is a drag queen dressed as Tina Turner doing a show during the afternoon. We're on the second floor. On the first floor, are all these people. And he says, we're going to have a very family fun couple. It's going to be fun, our model fun couple. And he picks this lesbian couple. Okay.
Naturally.
And then he decides, and then he says, he puts a box of ping pong balls, colored ping pong balls, a colored blue, on their behinds. And he says, shake your booty till the balls come out of the box. And look how shaking your booty is making so many blue balls.
Wow.
I'm not okay with that with kids. I don't care if it's a 10 o'clock show. I don't care if it's a show that's listed as PG-13 or 18 plus. But this is the assumption as a family show. So this continues. This is Saturday night. Sunday all day is family, spread love, get close, spread love. So again, it's that grooming, that language that is really insidious. Sunday night, they have their first stage show. Now, this is a stage show, and this, I think, is really important because I want to make it clear, AJ, this is not, and I'll explain to you as other demonstrations of this, but this is not just an out-of-control cruise director. This is an institutional corporate piece, and it is a conscious one. So there's a show called Soulbound. That's one of their production shows, the first production show. It's 7 o'clock. It's an early family show. And this show, which is the exact same show on all 24 Carnival cruise ships, is produced by a Carnival production company. I'm told it has the same choreography. Obviously, I can't verify that, but I'm told that. And in this show, there's a voodoo doctor and a witch, and there's a male ghost and a female zombie and the couples. And then suddenly, a spell goes wrong. That's the plot device. And the voodoo doctor is now fondling and dry humping the male ghost.
Dry humping.
Dry humping. He is fondling him and dry humping him.
And this is on a family cruise.
7 o'clock show in the main showroom.
Wow.
Now, again, I don't care if it's a straight couple or a gay couple. I don't want to see humping on a family show for children. And I don't want it to be said that that's just normal behavior in public or things like that. So this goes on. Now we get to Monday. And I know I'm very disturbed, as you can tell. And so Monday morning, I go to the cruise director, who is kind of like Mr. T, if Mr. T liked wearing dresses, although he doesn't wear dress all the time. If Mr. T was an exhibitionist. And we're on water, so there's not a lot of places you can go, and I certainly don't want to get up in the ship jail or brig, but I say, I need to talk with you. And I say to him, you know, I want you to know I'm a rabbi, and I have been involved with gay relationships and gay weddings. And he puts his hand on my forearm, which I'm not really hip on or comfortable with. And I say, but you're way out of line, at which point he puts his arms across and gets 6 inches in front of my face. Okay? Clearly wanting to pick a fight or put me to a place where I'm going to take a swing or something like that. That's what his intention is.
So this guy looks like Mr. T in drag. Is he a big guy as well?
He's a big guy. Big. I mean, I can show you a picture if you like.
That's okay. I'll take your word for
you
it.
Know, it might haunt your dreams, but I can show you a picture. he's a big guy. So and he puts his arms across and he says, Carnival is committed to diversity and inclusivity. And this is the part that really went off. And your children, because I said my children are sexually uncomfortable with this, and your children need to learn we are all a family and they need to learn to spread love.
So the family is more than just a theme. Now it's a sexualized family.
It's, well, it sort of sounds not like that to me. It seems like that because his answer is your children need to learn that we're all one family and to spread love. You can interpret that as if it's sexual, you can interpret it as just, you know, very ethereal, new agey. We all should be one family in love. But you know what? I don't want my children to think that strangers are family. So at this point, we never go to anything conscious. We try to avoid everything on the ship, that any ship programming. My wife and I were hoping to get some private time, let the kids go roam the ship and play foosball and go on the water slides. We would not let them be alone, obviously, on the ship again. And because it's just not a safe environment. And I start to try and reach out to the hotel director. And on a cruise ship, you have the captain who's in charge of everything. And other than that, you have the chief engineer who's in charge of all the physicality of the ship. And you have the hotel director who's in charge of everything else. The food, the hotel, the entertainment. She's above everything. And her name's Alina. And so I reach out to her 5 times and I get no response until Thursday of the ship. when I say, look, I write for PJ Media, among other sources, I really would like to sit with Alina. And lo and behold, I immediately get a call back. And I sit with her on Friday. Let me tell you a few things that happened between that Monday and that Friday. There, we walk by in the early evening, and this cruise director, Ryan, is on a bar, standing on a bar in a white micro mini jumpsuit, cut down to his navel. And AJ, I can tell you with 100% certainty, he's not Jewish.
Rabbi, wow.
In other words, the outline of his genitalia is distinct.
I got the picture. Wow.
No, you don't want the picture. And he's dancing on the bar. And so he's on this bar, and he's dancing, he's, you know, brick house or whatever, getting people fired up as he's prancing around like a stripper. Well, I don't want a stripper on a bar. I don't want a guy on a bar. And remember, when someone's standing on a bar, that means that everyone, all the passengers' heads are looking at his tochas, his behind, and his front. And I won't use the words that can be, except there's a clear outline. And he's shaking it all just like a stripper at a stripper bar. And the fact that he's in this kind of outfit, it's not, I'm not talking about shorts and a shirt. He's in a white jumpsuit and prancing around. It's disturbing. Extremely disturbing, actually. So I explain all this to Alina, the hotel director, when she does sit with me on Friday. And, you know, she says, oh, I didn't know this. And we talk about the show Soulbound and the dry humping. And she goes, well, it's part of the plot that a love spell went wrong. And so these two men are after each other. I said, that's not a plot. That's a plot device to get a certain agenda of that kind of sexuality. It wasn't needed. It wasn't necessary. And she tells me about him, this cruise director parading in drag as Tina Turner. You can find it online. I should share a link. And then she says something really disturbing to me. Now, let's forget about the fact that ultimately she does nothing. And ultimately that afternoon and the next day before we left, it's still family, 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 spread love. She says something extremely disturbing. She says, well, Rabbi, you need to understand that as a family, we spend more time with the crew than our own family, and we are family. And I said, that's fine, but you're not mine. She said, but we want all of our passengers to treat our staff like family. I said, that's pedophilia. That's grooming. And it's not okay. 8 emails were sent to Carnival from the ship and after, including to their executives, Arlene Brown, Christine Duffy. None were ever returned, and the subject lines were sexual behavior on ship, sexual behavior by staff on ship, children being sexually uncomfortable, etc. Spoke with multiple families who just aren't going to go back. But in the, you know, Disney has lost half of its stock price in the last year. And Carnival is more insidious than Disney. They have 100,000 passengers a week. And whereas Disney, it happens sporadically. And Carnival, it's when you're on the cruise, it's a 24-hour barrage. And it's dangerous. And it's reflective of an attempt to make, to normalize gender issues, which are not normal. And the stats are clear on all that. And to normalize it with an agenda of replacing the nuclear family with the family of the corporation or the government or the school or whatever it may be. And so it's really, really disturbing. And it was a horrible week. It was a really, really horrible, horrible week.
Wow. I can only imagine being stuck on a ship like this with my wife and my young children with nowhere to go and no one to talk to. What an absolute nightmare. Unbelievable. Rabbi, I'm going to have to take a short break, but when we get back, I have so many more questions for you. This is the AJ Steele Show.
You are listening to the AJ Steele Show, where no topic is off limits, no discussion too harsh, no truth more true. The AJ Steele Show. We tell it like it is.
Welcome back to the AJ Steele Show, Rabbi. What you told me is horrendous. You're trapped on a ship with your kids, with your wife, with this insane, trans, whatever, cruise director. I have a question for you that extends a little bit beyond just this particular cruise.
when we started this conversation today, you were talking about how you accept homosexuality. You have a libertarian point of view. Is that correct?
Correct. I you know what? It's very much live and let live. And you know, look, I do everything kind of based in Torah and in Judaism as a rabbi. There's a great statement, AJ, a great teaching that a guy comes into Father Abraham's tent and he sits down to eat. Abraham invites him in. And he starts to eat, and Abraham says, you can't eat without taking a blessing, without saying a blessing. And the man says, I don't believe in your God, and starts to eat. He says, you can't eat without saying a blessing. The man says, you can't do that without, I'm not interested in your God. Abraham says, get out of here if you're not going to bless God. The man says, fine, leaves. And then an angel knocks on the door and says to Abraham, father of our people, he says, Abraham, if God could put up with his disbelief for 70 years, how come you couldn't for 7 minutes? I don't have the right as a human being to judge other human beings in that way. I don't feel I have the right. And so I'm very much live and let live and very much accepting, but that doesn't mean that I want an agenda of grooming children or things that are inappropriate. And as I said, I would be just as disturbed had I seen a stripper on a pole in the show for children.
So I view the world a little differently than you, and I'm not an Orthodox by any mean of any kind. I don't even consider myself to be a true follower. And I'm also a libertarian in some ways. I don't care what people do in their own bedrooms. I couldn't care less. And if you talk about Orthodox Jews, they don't feel the same way as you do. They are completely opposed to the homosexual agenda, and so do most Christians who follow the Bible and the New Testament. The question is, do you think that because you and I and many other conservatives like us have been so libertarian when it comes to sexuality and the LGBTQ movement and did our best to be fair and, how should I say it, non-judgmental, has led to this explosion where now pedophilia and transgenderism has become mainstream?
I don't think that's it. I don't think that's the reason. You know, I believe we need to accept everybody, but we don't need to promote an agenda. And that's a big difference. I think part of what's caused this is a turning away from all of the boundaries and guidelines and values that we learn in the Bible. And I can speak with authority about Judaism. I try and stay out of speaking about Catholicism and Christianity. I wish they'd stay out of trying to tell me about my religion. And so I think that it's important to recognize that we have values, we have ethics, we have belief systems. The prohibition against homosexuality, there's a lot of interpretations of it in the Jewish scripture. It's in the book of Leviticus, the Levitical code, which says you shall not lie with another man the way you lie with a woman. And there are interpretations from everywhere that prohibits a relationship between any homosexual to that only prohibits rape. Because the verb is not ladad, which means to know, which is used for make love, but rather it's to lie with. And there's all sorts of interpretations. I think one of the challenges is, as we have, is in this 21st century, in the end of the 20th century, and again, I'll speak for Jews, a lot of Jews have converted out of Judaism. Not to another religion like Catholicism or Christianity, but to secularism or to secular leftism. And so their passions, their excitement, their devotion, like many converts, is to this secular leftism, and their hate is to their previous religion. HUC professor once said, it's not about making you feel good, it's about trying to make you be better. And that's what the teachings of the Torah, the teachings of the Bible, whether it's the Hebrew scriptures, the Christian scriptures, it's all about trying to help you be a better human being, to live more ethically, live more lovingly, make the world a better place. And it also, there's restrictions. It's hard. And they've rejected that in favor of secular leftism. And that's where I think we've lost it.
But Rabbi, I think you're skirting my question. In the old world, the religious world, when religions controlled the world, or at least morality, and we could talk about morality, police, about Iran and places like that, which we don't want to live in, there was definitely a taboo. Homosexuality was a taboo. It was something that was happening, I'm sure, but it was kept in someone's room or hidden. And we didn't have all this explosion that we have now. In some ways, this is liberalism. Maybe your interpretation of the Torah is more liberal than the Orthodox Jews. Maybe my interpretation of morality is also more liberal. Have we given consent to this behavior by the fact that we were so hands-off?
No, I don't think so. And part of it is I don't think that we have. I think we can have liberal and conservative interpretations of Torah. We say in Hebrew, Elu ve'elu, these words and these words are both words of the living God. And so Judaism is not meant to be monolithic. That's not what we are. We're based on the machlokas, the debate. If you go back even to the 1950s and 60s, and the Reformed Jews, the Rabbi Alfred Wolf, the Rabbi Edgar Magnin, these great Reformed rabbis, who often had more knowledge than Orthodox rabbis today, they were very clear in terms of where the boundaries, what's right and wrong. I think it's because we've lost, I think there's actually two. One is we've had so many people convert to secular leftism, and not liberalism, I think leftism. And I think quite honestly, and again, I'll speak for the Jewish world, or in the Jewish world, although I think it's probably true in the Christian as well, our clergy have let us down. Our clergy have failed. There are all too many clergy who are more concerned with how much money they make. They're more concerned with being on a bully pulpit. They're more concerned with being the darling of whatever leftist congregant or celebrity than they are with saying this is right and this is wrong. And you can see that a year ago when we talked about closing synagogues and churches. Why is it our synagogue was the only synagogue in the state to stay open and have live services and have live high holidays? Everyone knew what was wrong. We didn't close our doors for as Jews for Newsom or for Hitler or for the Inquisition, but they fell in line for Gavin Newsom. And the rabbis, and I've talked to rabbis about it, and they said, well, you know, my board wants me to do this, and my board wants to close. They're scared. You know what? Your job as the rabbi is to tell them what's right and wrong in terms of Judaism. Not to be so concerned. And you can see it there. You can see it in sexuality. You can see it in ethics and morals. You know, I blame most of the problems on our clergy. You know, I guarantee you, when Gavin Newsom said we're shutting down all the churches and synagogues, five rabbis could have taken that and stopped it in a heartbeat. Five rabbis who have multi-million dollar donors. And I'm not going to say who they are. In California, could have collectively called him and said, Newsom, you're going to lose our temples because we're going to stay open. And he would have folded like a pack of cards. But they didn't step up. In fact, one prominent rabbi made it mandatory that five and older had to be masked in the synagogue. And a couple of weeks later had a picture taken that he tweeted of him at the Super Bowl with no mask. The hypocrisy, the challenges, I think the challenges are clergy, AJ. I think that's a big piece of it.
Well, I think a big part of the clergy these days are a part of the Democratic Party. Most of them are liberals. They're not men of God or men of the Bible. I think there's a lot of questions about whether, and I could talk about Judaism with you because you're a rabbi. Many people, including myself, believe that Reformed Judaism is nothing but a club for Democrats. So that's an interesting topic to cover, and we might do that in another show. But let me ask you a personal question. You're taking on Carnival Cruises now. You're speaking out against Disney. You're speaking out against grooming. And there's a lot of repercussions to people who speak that way. What is making you do this?
It's wrong. You know, we're about to enter Hanukkah. And Hanukkah has a lot of meanings to it. It means dedication. That's what the word literally means. And in Hanukkah, it is a war that the Maccabees, the Hasmoneans, start against the Seleucids. And there's a lot of teachings about this. The comparison is made between the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah and the Jewish holiday of Purim. On the holiday of Purim, we go to war because Haman wants to kill the Jews. Find in the book of Esther. In Hanukkah, the Seleucid Greeks do not want to kill the Jews. They want to assimilate them and destroy their values. And we go to war and we rededicate the temple. And one of the reminders of this is we are to go into conflict if our physical lives are in danger, but we also need to go in conflict when our values, ethics, and spirituality are at risk. And to not do that makes us complicit. You know, this whole transgender issue is really, really painful and sad. And a war has been declared in so many ways through sexuality on our children. So one of the things that I want to share with you about Carnival, I came back from this cruise and I did some research. The Department of Transportation since 2010 monitors sexual assaults on cruise ships. Leading all sexual assaults on cruise ships is Carnival Cruises.
Wow.
It gets worse. There are more sexual assaults on Carnival Cruises per capita than the states of New York or California. Okay? Let's just put this in perspective. Moreover, according to FBI officials' testimony, only 7% have ever been prosecuted. Because what happens is whether the assault happens in a port or on water, it doesn't get reported till it's on water. It's in international waters. It's outside of U.S. jurisdiction. It's in the jurisdiction of the country of registry for the ship. In this case, Panama. Most Carnival ships are in Panama or some are Malta or Bahamas. And so now that sexual assault, criminal or civil, is handled through Panama. So you can guess where that goes. So my wife said to me when we got back and I started dealing with this, and I called you and I talked to some people, the editor, PJ, and talked to some other people. Rick Horner, there's a show called the Boating Hour. So different people. She said, Michael, you don't have the energy for this. You really needed that vacation because it's been a tough couple of years. And you didn't get it. It just made things worse. You don't have the bandwidth for this. And I looked at Allison. I said, but sweetheart, given these sexual assault numbers, if me having this conversation or bringing this to light prevents one child from being assaulted, how can I not do this? How can we not, all of us, not step up and say this is wrong? Carnival stock 4 years ago was at 50. It's currently at 9 because of the pandemic. If all the families, the ones that we talked to when we were on the ship, all said, you know what? The heck with Carnival. We're not going on Carnival until they change this and it's a safe environment again. Their stock's going to go to 3. And I guarantee you that Mickey Arison, whom I do not know, but who is, you know, the CEO, Christine Duffy, Arlene Brown, then they will take a serious look at what they're doing. And how can we not, when it's mind-boggling to me that there are more sexual assaults per capita on a Carnival cruise ship than the state of New York. So that's why Hanukkah teaches us, you go into conflict, you go into war, you go to have a fight, not just for your physical survival, but for your spiritual, ethical survival as well. So that's why.
And it sounds to me like you're going on a cultural war, and God bless you for doing that. I think that's very brave. Many of us who have done the same thing have been erased from social media. Just the other day, Twitter canceled our account because I was speaking about the insanity that goes along with LGBTQ. YouTube has banned some of my videos, some of my interviews I had with incredible professors. There's a war on normalcy. I do want to ask you a question that may be a little bit out of your comfort zone, but in some ways, the spiritual war that you're fighting, how does that translate to Christianity? Now, I'm not asking you to speak for Christians because you can't, but are they facing the same core battle as the Jewish people are facing?
The observant Christians and Christian clergy that I know, which, by the way, AJ, I am closer with many Christian clergy than I am with rabbis. With Reformer conservative rabbis. Orthodox rabbis and I are very close, but conservative and reform rabbis, the vast majority of my colleagues, I'm much closer to Christian clergy because we have shared values. We're not secularists. We're not leftists. My politics are based on my spiritual belief and my religion. Okay. They're an extension of that. It's not the other way around. My experience of what's going on in the Christian world from friends is just as much. In some ways, it's more because they're a larger target. In some ways, it's less because there's always anti-Semitism added to what happens to us. But I think that it's really sad that there is this war on religion.
Rabbi, on this very sad note, I'm going to have to take a short break. And when we get back, I'm going to ask you some questions about an article you wrote for the American Thinker called Why Gender Confusion is Increasing and What Can Be Done. This is the AJ Steele Show.
AJ Steele, not right, not left, just right.
Don't float like Ollie, don't sing like Howard, and don't cry like a pussy.
Welcome back to the AJ Steele Show. We are rejoined by Rabbi Michael Barclay. Rabbi, a couple of months ago, you came face to face with a child who was groomed by one of our teachers at school. And you wrote a wonderful article for the American Thinker called Why Gender Confusion is Increasing and What Can Be Done. And in it, you described a fascinating interaction you had with a 12-year-old girl who was influenced by a school teacher, and she decided to come out as a boy. Tell us a little bit about this story.
So a 12-year-old girl, we'll call her Josephine. Sweet kid, really good kid. Tomboy, had her first menstrual cycle. I can't imagine how traumatic that is for any woman, any young woman, but it was very traumatic for her. And she felt like she was separated from boys. She talked to her teacher. Teacher said, well, maybe you're uncomfortable because you're actually a boy. So we're going to call you, instead of Josephine, we're going to call you Joe. And we're going to do that. And so we'll see how that feels. And so a month and a half, 2 months later, she's much more comfortable because she can still play with the other boys now, without sexuality, you know, coming involved. And so she went to her parents and said, I'm a boy, and I want a bar mitzvah, not a bat mitzvah. And I want, you know, I'm a boy, and you're going to call me Joe. And the parents were very, very disturbed. They called me to come talk with her. And I said, look, you can't have a bar mitzvah because you're not the son of your mother. But we don't have to call it a bar or bat mitzvah. It's fine. But then we had a real conversation for a few hours. And I think that what came out of it is really important. Let's just first back up for a second. According to DSM-5, which is the 2013 official diagnostic tool of the American Psychiatric Association, 0.01% of people have what's called gender identity disorder or gender dysphoria.
Dysphoria.
Mm-hmm. Okay? That means 1 in 10,000 people. According to Pew Research in 2022, the media has put out that 5% of people are actually transgender or non-binary. Gender dysphoria. So suddenly there's an increase of 500 times in only a few years. Now that means that the people were not reporting it before, or something else is going on. Okay. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I side with something else is going on. UCLA says that 20% of June of 2022 article, they said that 20% of people who are transgender are between 13 and 17. Look, between 13 and 17, you don't know what you are. Your brain has plasticity. You're going through hormones. Yeah. You're all over the map. And so, in talking with this young person, and this is what we talked about in the American Thinker article, the problem here with gender dysphoria, and we need to be careful because 1 in 10,000 people really do have these issues going on. And we need to make sure that they feel safe as well. Okay? You know, in tribal societies, that person often becomes the shaman, traditionally in Peru, because they're so integrated with their two sexualities. But that's 1 in 10,000. So we need to be careful. We also need to be conscious. And the problem is that our culture in the last 20 years, 10 years, whatever you want to say, has conflated three separate issues into one. One is your gender or sex. This is your plumbing and your chromosomes. That doesn't change. You cannot make an X chromosome Y or a Y chromosome X. It's just that simple. That's one issue. The second issue is your sexuality. You like boys, you like girls, you like both, you like neither, whatever. Okay? That's a choice. And here's the big one, the third issue that our culture has, our society has conflated together. It's your energy. Male energy, within the East is called yang energy, goes out. It goes out. The ultimate example of hunting as a male is male energy is a wolf that goes out and hunts. Mm-hmm. Female energy draws in. Ultimate example being a spider who hunts with female energy and draws in. But we don't call a male spider he, and we don't call a female wolf she. And it's that simple. And we need to separate those three issues of energy, sexuality, and plumbing, or chromosomes, out again. Many tomboys end up being amazingly strong, beautiful women, powerful women. With a lot of male energy, a lot of female, a lot of guys, look, you and I both have a lot of female energy because of what we do creatively. That does not mean that suddenly we are, you know, a different sexuality. And I think it's important that we as adults, especially with the teenagers, 13 to 17, we try and put out to them, look, there's three different issues going on here. And let's look at what those three issues are. And just because you hunt like a wolf, young lady, doesn't mean that you're actually a boy. That's the gist of the American Thinker concept. So does that help a little bit?
It helps a lot, and it's very interesting. But are you going to tell us what your interactions with this young lady led to?
Yeah, she agreed that she would never have hormone therapy or surgery until she was in her late 20s.
Wow.
And that she would, which I consider a win, and because I explained to her the plasticity of her brain and how her body's changing until she was 27, 28. And so it's a win as far as I'm concerned. And she can explore whoever she is, and she understands, I believe, and she's a terrific kid, that it is her, that she's going to change throughout her teenage years. Like all teenagers do, we change in different ways. Come on, I don't know about you, but when I was a teenager, I wanted to be this profession, then I wanted to be this profession, and the next week I wanted to be this, and right? And you're right. Exploring who you are, and that's healthy to explore who you are. And so I'm really happy that it's turned out that way. Really good kid. And I have, you know, no issues with where she is. She will determine, and I want to be gentle because, you know, she may be one of the one in 10,000, or she may be one of the other 9,999.
I have no problem with what you did, and I think actually that's a wonderful thing. What scares me is that a teacher went outside the family structure and decided to tell her to become a boy. That, to me, is the most dangerous part, and I'm not sure what her parents were like, and we probably shouldn't get into that because it's a very personal issue. But to me, parents need to stand strong against these winds, these evil winds, I call them.
That's why I fight against Carnival, because it's the same thing. In California, a California teacher can get hormones to a kid without their parents knowing, and you know that. And it's despicable. And you know what? We need to fight against that. We need to fight against things like Carnival that are doing the same thing on their ships.
And it ties to your COVID battle that you had a few years back. Rabbi, let me ask you a spiritual question. The world that so many of us believe in is eroding right in front of our very eyes. Morality is being thrown by the wayside. Religion is being ridiculed and minimized. Our children, like you just said, are being sexualized with zero consequence. I'm not an end of times Armageddon type prophet, but I personally feel like we're living in devil times. How do we cope with all this on a spiritual level? Has God forsaken us?
Oh, no, never. We may have forsaken God, but God never forsakes us. You know, we may turn our backs on God, but not the other way. Again, I look to the book of Judges as one of the examples. In the book of Judges, everything's good for the Hebrews, and then they forget their values, and then it becomes really ugly. They're conquered by another tradition, until they cry out in pain to God, and God sends and rescues them with a judge, with a prophet, and everything is good. And then 20 years later, 40 years later, exact same pattern happens. You can read it in the book of Judges. Gideon and Deborah, it's all the same. And I think that maybe part of this is for us to realize this assimilation, and again, this goes to Hanukkah, this assimilation is dangerous. And as we see more and more danger, maybe it'll force other people to step up, to say, you know what, this is wrong. But as more and more things are put upon us, as more and more assimilation is pushed upon people, and the lack of morality, as you say, maybe people will start to have a wave and a commitment to say, you know what, we want to do what they did in Loudoun County. We want to bring in different school boards. We're not going to put up with this junk anymore, you know. Most of the families on this Carnival cruise, so we're never going on a Carnival cruise again. That doesn't help. There needs to be a concerted effort, articles, podcasts, to stop it, just like there has been in Disney. And they just got rid of their CEO, right? So, you know, one of the ways of changing the world is ascending symbolism, where it starts from here and goes up, and we change. And I think that we need to do that because God hasn't abandoned us. He's just giving us an opportunity to be stronger, to step up for what's right.
Well, that's a reassuring answer, Rabbi, that will put a lot of my listeners' minds at ease. So in your opinion, where is America headed? Do we still have hope for a future? I'm assuming you're going to say yes. But in some ways, I think we're staring at an abyss.
We are. We are staring at an abyss. And there is always hope. Can I relay a quick Hasidic story that I think teaches it?
Please.
Okay. The Baal Shem Tov, a great Hasidic master, a great mystic, was having challenges with his community. They were not getting what needed to be done. And that night, he had a dream. And in this dream, He's pulled out of his body and he can't speak. And he finds himself on a cliff and floating above the cliff, and down below is his community, and he still has no voice. And there in the middle, floating above it all, is a man walking on a circular ridge that's as thin as the blade of a knife, but the man is tootling on it as if it is large enough to drive horses on, oblivious of the danger of being so high. And still the Baal Shem Tov, the master, cannot find his voice, because you see, it's really dangerous. On the inside of this circular ridge is a hellfire, on the outside a cold abyss of space, and yet the man is walking along. Suddenly there's a flash of lightning. That lightning reveals to the man the dangers on both sides, the thinness of the ridge he walks on. And he starts to teeter and totter, and still the master can't find his voice. And just as the man is about to fall, the master finds his voice, and he yells at the man, he yells, "Fly!" And the man flew. I think we are at a place as a culture like that man on the circular ridge, and the lightning has gone off, and suddenly we're realizing the danger on both sides. We are in an abyss as a nation. But God always provides us with the opportunity to fly, to go to a different level. I truly believe that in my heart, AJ.
Wow. Rabbi, where can my listeners learn more about you and your work?
Our temple website is nersimcha.org, nersimcha.org. You can also just look me up as Rabbi Michael Barclay and they'll find me, or just Googling my name. We have weekly emails with Torah commentaries. We broadcast all of our classes that I give online and stream, our services as well, because it should be available to everyone. We're a synagogue that has no mandatory dues. First one in the non-Orthodox nation that do that.
Got it. Thank you. Well, Rabbi Michael Barclay, thank you so much for coming on the AJ Steele Show. I hope everyone reads your upcoming opinion piece on PJ Media, and that you keep exposing the truth that so many in the clergy and the media are afraid to speak of. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, AJ. Thank you for having me with you and sharing the time, and for everything you're doing in the world in general, because we need more spiritual warriors, not only at Hanukkah, but all the time. So thank you.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be. All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl.
The AJ Steele Show, copyrighted 2022.